football postseason lives on iHeartRadio.
Here we go. 20, 15, 10, heading to the goal line. Touchdown, Denver.
From the official NFL Podcast Network.
Welcome to NFL Daily.
Fox Sports Radio.
Sam Darnold is going to have to prove to all of us in a big game he can play big.
Or local stations that bring you the games live.
It's knocked away and it's intercepted.
iHeartRadio brings you all of it. Just open the iHeartRadio app and search football to dive in.
From lashes for days with the Viral Liquid Lash Extensions Mascara to awakening your eyes with lift and color from the Brilliant Eye Brightener, Thrive Cosmetics is the go-to when you want to amplify your everyday look. Plus, every product is 100% vegan, cruelty-free, and made with clean, skin-loving ingredients that work with your skin. And for every product purchased, Thrive Cosmetics donates to help communities thrive. So every time you use your favorite Thrive Cosmetics product, you're helping communities you care about, too. Amplify your everyday. Go to thrivecosmetics.com/shine26 for an exclusive offer of 20% off your first order. That's Thrive Cosmetics, CAUSEMETICS.com/shine26.
Midnight has passed, and in the stillness of these hours, the hauntings are never silent. This is Real Ghost Stories Online. After midnight.
By the time she reached her 30s, she had learned to describe her life in phases. Long, quiet stretches, interrupted by moments that never quite faded, no matter how much time passed between them. Looking back, what unsettled her most wasn't the intensity of any single experience, but the way they appeared, vanished, and returned years later, as if following a schedule she didn't understand. It began when she was 12. Her mother was raising 3 children alone, 1 daughter and 2 younger sons, and did what many parents do without hesitation. She gave her children the bedrooms and made the couch her own. It was a small sacrifice, one of many, and it became part of the rhythm of their home. Night after night, her mother slept in the living room, close enough to hear the kids breathe, far enough to give them their own space. One night after everyone had gone to bed, she realized she needed to tell her mother something. She got up quietly and walked into the dark living room. Her mother was lying on the couch, half awake, listening as she spoke. At some point, her mother told her to turn on the light. She reached for the switch. As her fingers touched it, another hand settled over the top of hers. Not a brush. Not an accidental bump. A hand. She felt the palm, the weight of it. The distinct shape of fingers resting across her knuckles. Instinctively, she pulled her hand away, assuming her mother had stood up and reached for the switch herself. The light didn't come on. She reached again and flipped the switch. The room lit up, and her mother was still lying on the couch exactly where she had been. She hadn't moved. She hadn't reached out. There was no one else in the room. She didn't scream. She didn't run. The moment passed in a strange, suspended way, as if her mind didn't know what to do with it yet. She finished telling her mother what she had come to say and went back to bed without mentioning the hand. At 12 years old, she didn't have language for what she had felt, only the certainty that it hadn't been imagined. A few weeks later, she got sick and stayed home from school. Her mother went to work. Her brothers went to school. The house emptied out until it was just her, lying on the couch watching television. At some point, she began hearing dishes clanging in the kitchen, the unmistakable sound of plates and utensils striking one another. Then came footsteps, measured, deliberate, moving through a space that should have been empty. She checked. The kitchen was still. The house was silent. No doors open. No explanation. Fear hit her all at once. She called her aunt and went outside to wait, sitting where she could see the front door and the street. She didn't hear anything else while she waited. When her aunt arrived, the house felt normal again. And then, just as abruptly as it had begun, everything stopped. For 3 years, nothing happened. She went to school. She grew older. The memory of the hand faded into something she wondered about occasionally, usually late at night when her thoughts wandered. The noises in the kitchen became a strange anecdote she didn't share often. Life continued the way life usually does when it isn't interrupted. At 15, it started again. Her grandfather owned a pool hall, and there was an old room inside it that had long since stopped being used. The pool table remained worn and scarred from years of games, but the room itself was mostly forgotten. One night, she and a friend were sitting on the pool table in the dark, talking about nothing in particular. Her friend nudged her arm and told her to look toward the bathroom doorway. A shadow stood there. It wasn't vague. It wasn't a trick of light. They could see the outline of a human shape clearly. It was short, roughly the size of a kid their age. Before either of them could react, the pool balls on the table began to move. One by one, they rolled across the felt and dropped into the pockets, as if guided by hands neither girl could see. They ran. Neither of them went back into that room again. Once again, the activity disappeared. Years passed without incident. She finished high school. She grew into adulthood. The experiences became isolated markers in her memory rather than a continuous presence. At 21, she married and had her first baby. They moved into an old family home, one that had been in the family long enough that stories about who had lived and died, they were spoken casually, without much thought. Her husband worked early mornings, leaving the house around 4 a.m., That was also when their baby daughter woke for a bottle. Every morning, as she fed and rocked her, she smelled pipe tobacco. It was strong, thick, the kind of scent older men carried with them, clinging to clothes and furniture. She had asthma, and the smell was overwhelming, as if someone were sitting beside her, smoking openly in the quiet room. It happened morning after morning, always at the same time. By the time their daughter turned 2, she began talking about a man in her bedroom. They wondered if it was an older family member who had died in the house, perhaps a great-great-grandfather who had built it. The idea was unsettling, but it also felt strangely benign. The presence didn't frighten their daughter. It seemed to interest her more than anything else. As the years passed, other things happened, and both she and her husband heard a baby crying when no baby was awake. Objects went missing and reappeared seconds later in places they had already checked. Their children would suddenly go quiet, stare into empty space, and then laugh as if someone were playing with them. It was simply there. At least, it was until the night she woke around 3 a.m. and heard footsteps outside the bathroom door. When she opened the door, no one was there. Her husband was asleep in bed. The children hadn't moved, and after that, the activity slowly receded again. For nearly 2 years, she saw and heard nothing, but the feeling never fully left. The sensation of being watched would rise without warning. Goosebumps would crawl up her arms and legs for no clear reason. She told herself the footsteps and pipe smoke were likely tied to family, to someone who had once lived there and never fully left. Then her daughter turned 11, and the quiet ended. Her daughter had never been an anxious child. She wasn't afraid of the dark. She didn't ask to sleep with lights on. She preferred her bedroom door closed, her room quiet and private, the way some kids instinctively claim their own space. For years, that confidence had reassured her. If something truly threatening were still around, surely her daughter would have sensed it earlier. That belief shattered the night her daughter came into their room shaking. She woke them both, terrified in a way her mother had never seen before. Not crying hysterically, not panicked in the way children usually are after nightmares. This was something colder, more focused. Her daughter said she had been asleep when something woke her. At first, she thought it was noise from outside. Then she realized it felt like something was being thrown at her. Tiny impacts, over and over. It felt, she said, like someone tossing small rocks from inside her closet. She lay there frozen, listening, feeling the hits land against her bed and covers. When it didn't stop, she ran. They checked everything, closet, windows, doors, the entire house. Everything was locked. Nothing disturbed, no explanation. Her daughter refused to go back to her room and slept on a pallet on their bedroom floor for a full week before she would even consider returning. Her mother told herself, it could have been a dream. Hypnagogic hallucinations, the kind of thing that happens when sleep and waking blur together. But the fear lingered long after the explanation should have soothed it. Even after she moved back into her room, her daughter said the sensations didn't entirely stop, and sometimes it felt like someone sat down beside her on the bed. She slept in a bunk bed, using the top bunk. She described hearing her school books shifting on the bottom bunk, the soft scrape of paper against metal, followed by the unmistakable creak of the bed frame, like weight settling. Once she heard something hit the floor and then saw a dark figure crawl quickly from her doorway toward the bed. That night, she slept in their room again, almost 2 weeks this time. Listening to her daughter describe it was different from listening to her own memories. As a child, she had absorbed fear silently, unsure whether she could trust her senses. As a mother, she had no such luxury. She could see the clarity in her daughter's eyes, the effort it took for her to be brave again, the way her voice flattened when she talked about it, as if emotion would make it worse. What troubled her most was how different it all felt. Her own experiences, even the frightening ones, had a strange familiarity to them. The hand on the light switch, the footsteps, the pipe smoke. They felt known, almost familial. The kind of presence you could imagine belonging to someone who had once lived there. Someone curious or lingering rather than malicious. What her daughter described didn't feel like that, and it felt intrusive. Throwing things, crawling, appearing suddenly and retreating quickly. It felt juvenile in a way that unsettled her, like something testing boundaries rather than observing them. She wondered whether she was projecting fear onto something neutral or whether the nature of whatever had been there had changed or multiplied. She started thinking back over the years, replaying events she had long since categorized as isolated. The hand on the switch, the clanging dishes, the shadow in the pool hall, the pool balls moving without touch, the pipe smoke that followed a schedule, her daughter's early stories of a man in her bedroom, the children laughing at empty air. What if those weren't separate events? What if they were stages? The activity seemed to move in cycles, appearing strongly, then receding for years at a time. And now, as her own experiences faded, her daughter's were beginning. The timing felt too precise to ignore. Almost like a handoff. She wondered if she had carried something with her without knowing it, or if living in that house, breathing that air, had marked her in some way. Maybe whatever had been there didn't belong to the house at all. Maybe it belonged to the bloodline. Her mother had never spoken of experiences like hers, but she had sacrificed space, slept in the open, always aware of her children. Maybe she had felt things too and simply never said them out loud. Maybe that hand on the switch had been reaching past her, not to her, to her future. The idea unsettled her deeply, that something could lie dormant, patient enough to wait years for the right moment to reappear. That it could shift shape, feel different, behave differently, depending on who it interacted with. That whatever had once felt gentle or familiar to her could feel threatening to her daughter. She didn't know whether it was one presence or two. She didn't know whether it was something inherited or something learned. Children notice things adults train themselves to ignore. Maybe her daughter was simply seeing what she had once seen, before years of rationalization dulled the edge. But then there was the question she couldn't shake. Why had she stopped seeing and hearing things just as her daughter began? She didn't like the implication. It suggested a conservation of attention, as if whatever existed required a focal point. And once it had one, it didn't need the other anymore. She began paying closer attention to her daughter's moods, her sleep patterns, the way she reacted to certain rooms. She avoided talking about it too much, afraid that naming it might give it weight. At the same time, she refused to dismiss her daughter's fear. She remembered too clearly what it felt like to be believed too late. The house felt quiet again. But this time, the quiet didn't feel like peace. It felt like something waiting. She didn't tell her daughter about the hand on the light switch. She didn't tell her about the clanging dishes or the pool balls rolling by themselves or the pipe smoke that used to fill the room every morning while she fed her as a baby. She especially didn't tell her about how the experiences had stopped for her almost exactly when her daughters began. Some things, she believed, became heavier once they were shared. Instead, she watched. She watched the way her daughter hesitated before going to bed, even on nights when she insisted she wasn't scared. She watched how she arranged her room, how she avoided the closet without consciously acknowledging it. She noticed how the house felt different when her daughter was uneasy, how the air seemed denser, the silence less empty. What unsettled her most was that the activity didn't escalate the way it had when she was young. It didn't crash dishes or move objects across rooms. It didn't announce itself loudly. It crept. It tested. It appeared briefly and withdrew as if gauging reactions. That behavior didn't feel accidental. It felt adaptive. She wondered whether what she had known as a child, the hand, the footsteps, the familiar smell, had been something else entirely. Something passive, observational, perhaps even protective in its own way. The pipe smoke never frightened her. The presence her toddler daughter described had never frightened her either. What her daughter was experiencing now felt different. It lacked context. It lacked familiarity. It didn't behave like something rooted in memory or family history. It behaved like something curious about fear itself. That distinction mattered. If this were a family member lingering, why frighten a child? Why crawl across a floor? Why throw things from a closet? Those weren't gestures of recognition. They were provocations. She considered whether the two presences, hers and her daughter's, were the same thing at all. Maybe she hadn't passed anything down. Maybe something else had arrived. She began thinking about timing again. Her experiences had flared at 12. Her daughter's began at 11. Both ages marked a shift, physically, emotionally, developmentally. A time when children become more aware of themselves as separate from their parents. When identity sharpens. When vulnerability changes shape. What if whatever had been around her when she was young had simply lost interest once she aged out of whatever it needed from her? And what if something else recognized that same window opening in her daughter? That thought disturbed her more than the idea of inheritance. Inheritance implied inevitability. This implied selection. She thought about her mother sleeping on the couch all those years, never fully separating herself from the children. She wondered if that proximity had mattered, if it had diffused attention, if it had protected them without her mother ever knowing she was doing it. Now her daughter slept behind a closed door. Independence, once a point of pride, now felt like exposure. She considered having the house blessed. The thought came with a complicated mix of comfort and dread. Blessings had worked before, but only temporarily. And if this wasn't the same thing, would the same response apply? She worried about making a mistake, about provoking something by acknowledging it incorrectly. She also worried about doing nothing. The watching feeling returned for her occasionally. Not the sharp, immediate awareness she'd known as a child, but something softer and more diffuse. Goosebumps without cause, the sense of being observed without hostility. It felt almost nostalgic in comparison to what her daughter described. That realization frightened her in a different way, because it suggested that what had once been hers might still be nearby, unchanged, and that what her daughter was encountering was something else entirely. She tried to talk to her daughter carefully, asking open-ended questions without leading her. She wanted to understand whether her daughter felt threatened or simply startled. The answers were inconsistent. Some nights, her daughter shrugged it off. Other nights, she admitted, the feeling lingered long after the moment passed. "It feels like it wants me to notice," her daughter said once quietly. That sentence stayed with her. Wanting to be noticed was different from wanting to harm, but it was also different from wanting to protect. It suggested need. She didn't tell her daughter what she was thinking. She didn't want to frame the experiences before her daughter had a chance to process them herself. But privately, she began to shift her behavior. She spent more time near her daughter's room at night. She paid attention to patterns, times, moods, emotional stressors. She noticed that the activity seemed stronger on nights when her daughter felt overwhelmed or upset. On nights when she was calm, it faded into background noise. That correlation made her wonder whether fear itself was the conduit. Not blood, not lineage, not inheritance. Sensitivity. Perhaps she hadn't passed something down, and Perhaps her daughter had simply inherited the same openness, and perhaps openness was enough. That possibility felt both relieving and terrifying. Relieving, because it meant nothing had been intentionally transferred. Terrifying, because it meant this could happen again. Later, to someone else. That it wasn't bound to a person, but to a trait. She began teaching her daughter grounding habits without labeling them as protection. Breathing. Focusing on physical sensations. Speaking calmly when afraid instead of freezing. She framed them as tools for anxiety, not supernatural defense. The effect was subtle but noticeable. The incidents didn't stop entirely, but they softened, shortened. The crawling figure appeared less often, the sounds became less distinct. The fear still surfaced, but it no longer spiraled as deeply. That gave her hope and raised another question. Had her own experiences faded years ago because she'd learned unconsciously how to withdraw attention? If so, then what she was teaching her daughter might be enough. Or it might simply be delaying something she didn't yet understand? She doesn't claim to know the answer now. She doesn't know whether what she experienced as a child and what her daughter experiences now are the same thing wearing different faces. She doesn't know whether one gave way to the other or whether they merely shared space for a time. What she knows is that something changed. She no longer sees or hears what she once did. Her daughter does. And whether that is coincidence, inheritance, or timing remains unresolved. The house is quiet most nights, but quiet, she has learned, is not the same as empty. And sometimes the most unsettling question isn't what is there, but who it chooses to watch next.
Want more real ghost stories? Then press subscribe now so you don't miss any of the multiple new ghost stories we drop for you every day. Only here at Real Ghost Stories Online.